You know what? Maybe you should make more Fortnite jokes because then men will
listen to us. As a keyword in your SEO. This is like you could you should just do an entire episode about like Fortnite and the Enneagram just to drive up your search results.
Oh gosh.
We should do like a men's episode that is all men stereotypes, and it's like, what up, bros? Are you wondering what's up with those feelings?
I'm on my eighth beer.
Break out the pizza and let's talk about how we relate to chicks. Hi, I'm Richard Clark.
And I'm Bethany Perkins.
We can't stop talking about the Enneagram.
So we decided to start a podcast where we get it all out of our system.
We're not experts.
We're just obsessed.
It's No Chill Enneagram.
A safe space for Enneagram fanatics.
And a really dumb idea for a podcast. Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. As you already heard in the intro, my name is Richard Clark, but I wanted to say it again on purpose this time. Bethany Perkins.
Yes.
How's it going?
It's going good. How about you?
Good. We have an awesome guest. I'm tired of saying we have a special guest. We say that every episode, and everyone's special, but this guest is awesome.
Yeah.
Some of you may know his name. Some of you may not. Some of you may only know his last name. Whoever you are, we hope you accept him and revere him. His name is Barnabas Piper. Barnabas, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Richard and Bethany Perkins.
You nailed it. You did it right.
Yeah, that was good. Barnabas, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, that's the worst question. I'm gonna go ahead and critique your interviewing, Richard. I realize you've been doing this.
I have nothing to prove. I'm pretty confident in my interviewing skills. So,
but
I'm
maybe
just,
you shouldn't be.
This is my pressure relief valve where I just ask people things like, "Tell me a little about yourself."
Tell us a lot about yourself. How about that?
All right. Well, can you be more specific?
What's the first thing anyone should know about Barnabas Piper?
Yeah.
The first thing that I don't, that is, I have, what?
Go. What's your identity in? Where?
Wow.
Well, okay, fine. A little bit about myself. I'll give you the standard stuff. I work in publishing. I live in Nashville. I have two daughters who are 12 and 9. I suspect they will come up later because my understanding is that you guys are going to help me through life challenges. And
heck
being,
yeah.
Being a parent of two daughters is a life challenge.
I'm a pro. I've been a parent of a daughter for 7 months.
And so which is exactly why this seemed like the right place to come to, because I know you're raising a small son and a smaller daughter, and it seemed like the perfect place to go for advice.
I have zero kids, so yes.
Well, then you are ultimately qualified, because nobody loves to give parenting advice like those who have no kids.
Exactly. I did it on another episode.
we do it regularly.
Yeah.
Perfect. I expect to go away with all my problems solved.
You should.
What else about me?
You host another podcast. Our podcast listeners are podcast listeners, so...
It's true.
They might be interested in that.
I co-host a podcast called The Happy Rant, where we, the short version is that we poke fun at ridiculous things that happen in culture, both Christian culture and the broader culture. And occasionally we get serious and thoughtful, but mostly it's tongue-in-cheek and making fun of things. The Gospel Coalition is a perpetual foil for us.
We actually talked about them in, I think, the last episode. I'm not sure when it'll go up.
See, apparently, they're a perpetual foil for a lot of people. They're sort of irony by accident, I think, sometimes. Let's see. And then we'll go after your typical megachurch pastors and just kind of all things trendy, you know, when pastors in pleated pants cut up Nike gear from the pulpit, that provides good fodder. So that's sort of the gist of the podcast. We have a good time. I co-host with a guy named Ronnie Martin, who also loves the Enneagram. I think he might be considered obsessed.
One of the questions we always ask people when we have them on is, who's your dad?
I've noticed that from previous episodes, that you had scintillating conversations
with
other people's
dads. We're always
asking
that question.
My dad's fairly uninteresting. My father is John Piper, and so I don't think he would come on the podcast. He may not have heard of the Enneagram.
Well, really? That, I sent him an email. He hasn't replied yet.
Just add, you know, just johnpiper@johnpiper.com or something like that.
That's
just
what it is. Is it jpipes at johnpiper?
Johnny P. Yeah, any of the above. I don't think he would have any idea. I mean, if you said, what's your Enneagram number, I think you'd just get the blankest of stares, and it would be somewhat
amusing.
He has
to know what the Enneagram is, or he has to have heard of it, right?
I suspect he's heard of it, if nothing else, because, once again, the Gospel Coalition wrote an article about it.
Yeah. It's several, a couple of them.
So we're going to get back to him and a lot of the other things that we just mentioned. But first, we have to type reviews, guys. And Barnabas, you're going to help.
Yep.
I'll try to pitch in. Unlike you guys, I'm more Enneagram curious and interested, and not I'm not obsessed enough to be just quick on the draw, but I'll try.
Yeah, okay. So one of the things we're going to do while you're here is help you figure out if you're a 7 or an 8. But in the meantime, let's get started. You want me to do the first one, right, Bethany?
No, I want to do the first
one. You want to do the first one. Go.
Okay, one of the best podcasts ever. 5 stars from Marzia Pans Brofits 2.
Marzia Pans Brofist 2.
Okay. I love it so much because they aren't all formal, and I feel like I don't have to take notes about it all. I can just enjoy it all and have a nice time listening to the podcast.
5.
Thanks, guys. No, 5s want to take notes.
But who wants to take notes on any other podcast?
That was my question. I've never felt compelled to take notes at a podcast.
I have.
They're like, this one gives me permission not to take notes. I'm like, well, you definitely don't have to ever take notes on podcasts.
But would a 5 find one worth listening to that you didn't take notes on?
I don't understand the question.
Wouldn't they just dismiss a podcast that was not worth taking notes while listening to? They'd be like, not worth it. Not worth my time if it's not worth sort of the intentional effort.
Yeah, it's you're not learning like that much from us, so
maybe
I don't think it's a 5. I think it's somebody who doesn't want to think, so maybe a 7.
Yeah,
that seems reasonable.
No, 7's like thinking. Maybe it's a 2.
But 7's also like just sometimes you just want to have like hit play and enjoy yourself, have fun.
Yeah.
Although no 7 would be compelled to take notes on anything as far.
That
as
was yeah. That's
right?
I'm still stuck on that. What other type would want to take notes on a freaking podcast? That makes no sense.
Okay. Wow.
All right.
We're just making this person feel bad.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Funny and informative. 5 stars. K. Pallius is the one who did this one. Please pay no mind to the fact that I share the same last name as one as the host. I am enjoying the passion with which Bethany and the other guy, Teehee, shares insights on the Enneagram. Does it need to be capitalized like a city? In all seriousness, this is actually very informative. Who knew? Sounds like a 5.
Yeah.
Who is that, Bethany?
I don't know.
You don't know?
What? Am I supposed to know?
They share the same last name as one of the hosts.
Oh.
And they seem to know who you are, but not me.
I feel like the Teehee might have been a giveaway that there
the
was some
other
sort
guy,
of like inside
Teehee.
Joke.
The I other. Really don't know who this is.
Okay, I'm going with 3.
I'm just throwing out a number on that
yeah,
one.
Let's just go 3.
I share a last name. This is a puzzle to me.
Okay, we'll talk about it offline.
Okay.
Go with the next one.
This one is a review from a 2. 5 stars from Mama Perks. That's my mom, if you didn't know.
Does she also share a last name with one of the hosts?
Yep, she does.
Perkins. Right.
That's it. I don't know about I don't know a lot about the Enneagram, but I do know about entertainment. This
does
podcast,
she, really?
She does.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I'm her daughter, so.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. This podcast is informative, insightful, but most of all, entertaining. I want more. Keep it coming. Thanks,
cool.
Mom. She's a 2.
Thanks, Mom.
Yeah.
I'm going to do one more, and then we'll move on. No chill at all. 5 stars. From Caitlin 1067. That's her pin number.
Now we just have to track her down and get her debit card.
Exactly. Yep. I've had no chill about the Enneagram for a while now. It's gotten bad. I've made all of my friends take the test and have essentially appointed myself their personal Enneagram coach. I'm a 2 classic. Yep. It's a spiritual discipline for me to get through a conversation without anyone without mentioning it. Anyways, blah, blah, blah. It's all very good words, but it's a lot. P.S. I absolutely love the segment. So funny and creative. Bethany and Richard are fabulous co-hosts.
Yeah, we are.
P.P.S. Enneanum can happen. Thank you.
Yes.
That's important. Is it Enneanum or Enneanum? I forgot.
It's Enneanum.
I like Enneanum, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of, Barnabas, what's your Enneanum?
I'm not sure. I think it's a 7, but sometimes it might be an 8, and so I'm somewhat conflicted.
Okay.
So
I need help from obsessed people who like to be Enneagram coaches. What do you need from me to help me figure this out?
Well, what do you relate to about a 7?
Always trying new things. So just sort of perpetually gravitating towards something new. Like if I go to a restaurant and I enjoy it, I don't want to go back there. I want to go try the next one that I might enjoy, even though I already know that I enjoy the previous one. And I'm completely stumped by people who keep wanting to go back to the same place and order the same thing every time. Those kinds of things. I rarely read a book twice, even if it's fantastic. If a book has changed my life, I still won't reread it. It did its job. Now we're on to the next one. It's hard for me to like binge watch Netflix shows because I'll make it about halfway through one episode and want to skip to something else because this one just isn't quite engaging enough. So just sort of that perpetual trying new things. While I'm not sort of the lighthearted fun in every room, I do make jokes about everything.
Okay.
Doesn't matter what it is. Make jokes at a funeral. It's just somewhat of a compulsion of mine.
Is it because we're going to get deep now. Are you avoiding pain when you do this? Is that, you think that's the sort of the core reason?
I mean, I guess that's one way to put it. I know that can be a very unhealthy thing. Like if you refuse to sort of acknowledge or confront or deal with pain, but sometimes like if you're just in a crappy meeting at work, like that's unnecessary pain. So one way to make it go away is to make people laugh. You know, make it more lighthearted. So I guess I'm helping everybody avoid pain in that instance. I don't think, as much as I am self-aware, that I refuse to sort of deal with hard things, which is, you know, an unhealthy 7, sort of the refusal to do that. I don't relate a ton to the sort of unhealthy 7 inability to sort of stick with things and get things done. That's not really an issue for me. So when I start reading that kind of stuff about 7s, I kind of look at it and go, it doesn't sound like me.
Okay, so, but Barnabas, you have to own one of these flaws.
Yeah.
You have to identify with something. So is the flaw like more of an 8 flaw of like you're terrified of being controlled by something?
I hate being controlled by things.
Yeah.
That sounds miserable.
Yeah.
Like that, I feel claustrophobic saying those words out loud.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But okay. don't 7s hate that too, though? Like, there's sort of. Isn't that a similarity between the two?
Well, yeah. I have a 7 friend, and he's fine going along with stuff as long as it's like you're doing stuff. He's totally fine for other people to make the plans as long as you're doing stuff.
Yeah, 7s don't want to be constrained by other people. Like, they just don't want people to get in their way of whatever they're pursuing. 8s are more concerned with just power in general, like... Mm-hmm. And control.
See, here's what's tricky is I think when I'm like at work, so I'm when I'm yeah. kind of in that mode, I lean yeah. heavy on the 8 side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm just in social life, normal relationship, I lean much more 7.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
But actually, I spend about half of my life doing each, which leaves me somewhat confounded. Confused.
I feel like I've heard this a lot from people who tend to lean into a wing when they're at work, or maybe vice versa. I don't know. It seems like it would be really sad if you had to lean into a wing for home. But
yeah. Please, but don't be your, for please don't be your true self at home. That sounds awful. Gosh. Nobody wants that from you.
Definitely Jennifer doesn't. I tend to lean, I try to lean into three when I'm at work, but I'm really bad at it. Unfortunately, I'm trying to get better. That's something I've been trying to cultivate, is my wing.
Are you optimistic? Do you reframe things? Do you reframe negatives into positives?
I'm not pessimistic, meaning like I don't always just sort of go, oh, this is the worst. Well, you know, there's no solution to this. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sort of like a peppy optimistic. That's one of the things about seven that I don't relate to. Like the person who's just sort of perpetually buoyant. Mm-hmm. I'm more just like perpetually steady. And so if there's a negative, I'm going to bring it to steady. And if there's somebody who's like bouncing off the walls, I'm probably going to bring them down a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm not the life of the party seven. Anytime I see sevens described as life of the party, I just kind of want to go away from that person. Mm-hmm. They annoy me.
Okay.
Dang. Sorry, sevens. Barn hates you.
Yeah. Well,
no, just that one kind.
Yeah.
Is that all sevens? And so I'm not one. Is that what we determined?
Kind of. Well, they don't.
I mean,
they don't.
Well, the seven with an eight wing is described as the realist on the Enneagram Institute.
See, I would like to describe myself that way, but that sounds so pretentious. No, you're an optimist. You're a pessimist. I'm realistic. Like, well, I'm the one who has a grip of reality.
Oh, we all feel that way.
Well, you think that's pretentious. The eight with a seven wing is described as the maverick.
Which, yep, that sounds like somebody I'm not a big fan of either.
It does, but also it kind of sounds like you, Barnabas, a little bit.
Okay, so somebody I'm not a big fan of, that could also fit. I don't know that I would
that
like
is
me
totally
if I met
totally how
me.
The Enneagram works, FYI. It is. You're probably right. The number you hate the most.
Yeah, whichever one makes you like cringe when you hear it.
Yeah.
See, maybe this is the realist in me, but none of the numbers made me cringe. There was some of them that I was like, well, that's clearly not me, because mm-hmm. there's just nothing in common at all.
Yeah.
Like a six or a nine, just nope, not even a little bit. Mm-hmm. But the others I looked at and I was like, yeah, I kind of see myself in some of the positives and some of the negatives.
Yeah.
You know, like the negative side of three I looked at and I was like, oh, I've definitely been there. You know, mm-hmm. that's been me. So yeah, I don't know. I don't have a visceral reaction to Enneagram numbers. I can look at some of the negatives and go, I definitely see that. And then on the healthy side, I look at that and I go, I mean, I hope so. That looks good.
How angry are you?
Right now.
Like this very moment?
Because of this show.
Yeah.
You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, like a, you know, 2.3 right now. So we're doing okay.
Oh.
No, like in life, I'm not a terribly angry person. I don't get real angry. That's one of the things about eights, like the sort of heated, explosive, controlling kind of thing. Yeah. I mean, my kids might say otherwise, but I think every parent has to be an eight towards their kids at some times.
True.
Maybe just when they're preteens.
That is true. I have been an eight to my kid.
Yeah, well, you have to control a child because otherwise they do insane and stupid things.
Yeah.
but no, I don't go through life angry and intense that way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think. There could be somebody listening who works with me who's rolling their eyes right now and being like, that jack wagon has no idea anything about himself. So
yeah,
that's a possibility.
Okay.
What number would use the word jack wagon? That's a
I didn't
real
know
question.
If I'm allowed to swear on this podcast, so I didn't.
So you said jack wagon.
Okay, so think
Bethany,
about...
Bethany, we have to choose one for him.
Okay, I just have one more question,
okay.
I hope. What are you like when you are the most stressed?
Yeah, what's like your coping mechanism?
I just sort of... I become really unproductive in terms of, like, I just sort of ping-pong between things. So instead of being able to sort of cool-headedly manage whatever life is throwing at me, which mm-hmm. is the way I am most of the time, I bounce between things, whether it's tasks at work or getting just anything, or my wheels just spin in my brain trying to figure out what to do next, which means I'll sit there for like 30 minutes doing nothing, which is an utter waste of time.
That's a five is what he's describing. So
what I'm hearing too.
He's an eight going to five in stress. And when you're healthy, you probably are very like giving towards others.
I hope so.
Loving towards others and
empathetic,
like empathetic,
protective.
All that stuff.
I don't think anybody has ever used those words, at least not regularly, towards me. Okay. Or about me, I should say.
But yeah. When you're healthy, like, maybe you're thinking about other people more than yourself.
That I hope is true. I certainly try.
Yeah.
Wait, so am I an 8 then? Is that what we decided?
That's what we're leaning towards.
That's been my hunch all along.
That has been my hunch all along too.
I'm not opposed to either of them. I just wasn't sure. Right.
And here's the reason. Here's the big picture reason for me, Barnabas, is like people who write and people who do projects that are creative, and you're one of those people, tend to like gravitate towards the thing they're about. And I feel like challenging is a little bit what you're about to some degree.
I'm relatively contrarian.
Yeah.
Just in kind of anything.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Kind of the alternative perspective to whatever is presented to me.
Yes. Here's the other very, very subjective reason I think you're an 8. I get a feeling when I'm around 8s. It's not a negative feeling. It's just a particular feeling.
You have like an 8 spidey sense?
I do, yes. Yeah. And more than any other number. And I definitely get that from you. No
what
question.
I mean, at the risk of getting real personal real fast, what is that feeling? What do I make
like
you feel?
Like a warm, fuzzy feeling. I'm just kidding. No,
I think I know what you're saying.
It's almost like, I gotta get on this person's good side real quick.
Mm-hmm.
It's that feeling.
But that sounds intimidating.
Yes.
There's an element of intimidation.
Wait,
and I think
intimidating.
If you,
that sucks.
Well, I think if you asked around, you'd find that other people, some people might be intimidated by you on occasion. Mm-hmm.
Well, now we've settled on that aspect of you are a number that you don't like. I'm not.
Your reaction is making me so happy right now because this is what it should be.
This is what we look for.
Intimidating. Well, people who are intimidating on purpose are the worst. I don't think I try, but like.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You're not that.
I'll tell you how I feel about like the 8s in my life. I haven't like talked to you, Barnabas, for long enough to say how I feel directly about you. But
we'll get there at the end of the episode.
Yeah, by the end.
We'll revisit this.
No, I feel like a little bit scared, but also safe.
Yeah.
That's how I feel around the 8s in my life. Like, they are intense. They can be intimidating. I am not intimidated by them because I know them. But yeah, it's just this feeling of like, this person is a force.
That puts intimidation in a very positive light. I'll take it. Thank
you. You're welcome.
So I'm an 8. Is that's what the experts
we're going with the 8 wing 7. Our next segment is called Why Don't Men Like the Enneagram or Our Podcast?
Yes.
Barnabas, I have a question.
Take it away.
Why don't men like the Enneagram or our podcast?
That would be a good name for a segment of this podcast. You should.
I know. It makes me a little sad and not really uncomfortable. I'm fine with it, but I just want a more diverse audience.
Mm-hmm.
And since you're our first like real, not real dude. No, our first our first episode where we only had a dude is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
Fred because Rogers we've didn't had, count.
He didn't show up. We waited forever.
I know,
we just had to do it
so
without
annoying.
Him.
Yeah.
And then, but we've had like Jesse Eubanks on, but he was part of a co-hosted thing with Samantha. And then who else? We had your dad on, Bethany.
Yep, we had
and
my
we
dad.
We had Atticus on.
What's his
had
number?
Alan.
Atticus's number. He doesn't have one yet.
Gotcha.
Are we
he's
just
a little boy?
Is there like an age of accountability for Enneagram? Like
19.
25 for men because that's when their frontal lobe is fully formed.
Yeah, it should be 25 right. For men.
Oh, snap.
No. Do you want to know the real reason why I say that?
Yes.
It's because my dad is a psychologist and he said that personality is not developed fully until 19.
Wow.
At least. Yeah.
I think I became a 4 fully when I was about 32.
What?
Isn't that weird? But I think it's true.
That could have a lot to do with, back to the original question, why men don't like the Enneagram.
Yes, why is
that?
Wait,
what's the reason?
because they're immature.
Well, I mean, it took you until you were well into adulthood to sort of, you know, fully become a four or fully recognize that you were. That's a lot of adulthood where you're either not self-examining, you're not processing things, you're just sort of, guys do a lot of just sort of meandering through life and getting things done. Not a lot of recognition of emotions or feelings or processing anything of depth. And even the guys who think they're processing things of depth are like seminarians who are processing theology. So it's all, there's sort of a, there's like a
which is a total
aspect.
Dodge, I've noticed. Have you noticed that?
Oh, there are so many guys who are, you know, sort of ace experts at something who are, you know, sort of emotional or relational cretins and, or just children, you know, and when it comes to that. Mm. And so I think that has a lot to do with it. Imagine walking up to your average like 27-year-old guy and going, how do you feel about whatever? Mm-hmm. Like, they're just going to kind of make a joke out of it.
I don't know.
I constantly am doing that.
You're asking 27-year-old guys how they feel about things?
I mean, I think so, yeah.
Well, that's good.
I think it's becoming more accepted. But it's not the norm for guys to respond well to that stuff. And, you know, if you know them well, it's an entirely different thing, too.
That's true. Yeah.
But, I mean, I think the Enneagram is a, you know, being invested in it is a perpetual investment at sort of picking yourself apart.
Yep.
At some, you know, at a pretty deep level.
Yeah.
And that is not a thing that your average man enjoys.
As we've just seen.
Well, here's the thing. I don't necessarily enjoy the process. I really appreciate the results. So I've learned to appreciate what comes about through uncomfortable introspection.
Sure, yeah.
But again, not at 21 or 23. It was, you know, late 20s, early 30s that became something that I was more comfortable with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or at least more appreciative of.
Yeah.
You know, I'm okay with learning that I suck at something now because it's inevitable. And so may as well figure out what it is so I can figure out how to respond well to it.
Yeah.
But at, you know, at 25, I would have just been defensive or deflecting or something like that.
Okay. Well, let's type people in things and we're going to start with your dad.
Yeah.
All right.
What number is your dad?
So you guys pegged him pretty quickly as a one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think what we were doing is more like typing all reformed reformed leaders as like classic ones, basically.
So here's what I think, here's where you guys got sort of tricked.
Yeah.
All reformed preaching is one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Reformed preachers preach as ones, even if they're not. It's the way of expression and articulating theology and arguing and, you know, leaving no gaps, and it's this airtight systematic thing.
Yep.
Which leaves you to believe that they then are a one. But I think you guys typed Tim Keller as a five. My dad and Tim Keller are real similar in that. My dad's louder when he preaches, but in terms, like, he doesn't, he could go hole up in his study for like 82 straight days studying, working, researching, whatever, and like, as long as somebody delivered like Coke Zero and Grape Nuts to him twice a day, he wouldn't even notice there was no humans around.
Oh my gosh.
Man, we've all been there though, haven't we?
I've never been there.
So I think he's a five when it comes to just like, even when you get into a conversation with him and he gets into like the deep background meanings of anything, and just sort of like the deep dive analysis of bloody everything,
like addicted to knowledge and
he's whatever 72 years old, which means it's just instinctive to him now. Like, he's not even trying. That's just like the one gear he has. So it's I think he's pretty clearly a five, but then he gets in the pulpit and he's a screaming one.
Yeah.
Well, and also fives go to eight in growth, which would also make a little bit of sense, like when he's getting in the pulpit and he's feeling like he's in his element, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's sort of his one kind of emotional outlet. you know, in terms of like bold expression of anything, because he lives a pretty scholarly life otherwise, not a lot of room for screaming, yelling, shouting, gesticulating, etc. And my mom wouldn't have it if he tried that at home. So, he's a five who goes one in the pulpit.
Yeah,
I'm sure you're used to it by now, but that must have been a weird experience to see your five dad get up in the pulpit and then just like get super passionate all of a sudden.
I didn't realize it was weird until other people started, like, they sort of responded to him in person, expecting him to be this sort of huge personality. And he's a really retiring personality. He's an extreme introvert who's like soft-spoken and just doesn't love social interaction very much.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when there's these sort of hyper fanboy types who are trying to engage with him, it was always just, it's like a nature show. You just sit back and watch. I wish I could get like David Attenborough to do the voiceover on it. But yeah, that's when I realized, like, oh, the impression he gives to everybody is that's him 100% of the time. The super intense preaching guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we assumed as much. But yeah, I think that we could probably apply that to a lot of the people that we talk about. Like, we're typing like their public persona.
Totally.
What we've seen of them. Who knows?
Like Larry the Cucumber, for instance.
Didn't you have a reviewer who just raked you guys over the coals for getting that one wrong?
Yes, we did.
That makes me happy. Not that you got it wrong. I don't even know if you did, but just that a listener cares enough to correct you about that.
In the same breath as, like, real criticisms. That was the most amazing part about it, was that it was like, and also, Larry the Cucumber is not a two, idiots.
Yeah.
I will say I've never had the experience of wanting to type a fictional character.
Really?
Never. I guess that shows that I'm not sort of next level obsessed.
You're not we'll insane make you like next level. Us.
Yeah. You're going to go a step beyond typing fictional characters. We're going to type.
I'm going to write an Enneagram novel.
We're going to type denominations. That's our next segment. Here's how this is going to work. People are going to blurt out denominations, and then we're going to talk about what type they are.
Ooh, yes.
Barnabas, you can blurt out some denominations.
At the risk of losing my job, the Southern Baptist Convention.
Yes.
The Southern Baptist Convention. I'm going to go three on this one because they want everyone to know how many. They're like the foremost denomination. They're always talking about how they're the biggest denomination.
Yeah, that's true.
And how many baptisms they have and how much missions they do.
Super numbers driven, that's true. Yes. Offering this all and metrics. Baptisms that, yes.
Yeah, I agree.
I can all see success that. Oriented.
Now describe an unhealthy three, just so that we can flush this one out a little bit.
Good idea. I almost did that with your dad, but decided not to.
Oh, shoot. Go for it.
No. That's just not cool. He should be in the room if we're going to do that. Number seven, unhealthy level. Fearing failure and humiliation. They can be exploitative and opportunistic. Covetous of the success of others and willing to do, quote, whatever it takes to preserve the illusion of their superiority.
This is amazing.
I'm dying right now.
I'm just going to make affirming sound effects and not speak to that at all.
That's okay. You don't have to.
All right. I think we nailed that one. What about let's just go charismatics, right? Like,
yes.
Good old conservative.
Like the Assemblies of God?
Yeah. Okay. Charismatic. What do we think?
Right.
You could see four, maybe. Six. I'm going six.
Okay.
Six is the number that leaves me the most confused. So
it's a very confusing number.
Yeah,
they are confusing.
Puzzle that one out for me a little bit. I mean, charismatics also confuse me, so that could be a fit. But flesh this one out a little bit for
me. I'm reading about them, and I'm going like, never mind.
You're reading about what, sixes? Or
yeah.
he's maybe he's looking enthusiast. Up the Assemblies of God website.
It is the right enthusiast. Now. It's the seven, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think so, because very experience-driven.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they fear being deprived and in pain. Health and wealth, anyone?
Mm-hmm.
Not that every charismatic is a health and wealth, but it definitely kind of, you know, it's tied in. Let's read about the unhealthy level. This is a good idea, Barnabas. desperate to quell their anxieties, can be impulsive and infantile. do not know when to stop.
That could actually apply to like 14 different denominations.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. Addictions and excess take their toll. Debauched, depraved, dissipated, escapist, offensive, and abusive. Ooh. That was harsh.
sadly, that could also apply to several denominations. But
the one above says get into the level six says get into conspicuous consumption, all forms of excess, self-centered, materialistic, greedy, never feeling they have enough, demanding and pushy yet unsatisfied and jaded, addictive, hardened, and insensitive.
Oh my gosh.
Whoa. I feel like we're offending people now. Yeah.
We did.
Let's talk about our denomination so we can be equal opportunity here. I guess we already did mine and Barnabas's.
You did yours. Okay.
What is yours? What's your denomination?
Freaking
Bethany?
Non-denominational.
Four.
Yeah. That's,
four.
Four is like the anti-label, right? Like,
yeah, that's true.
Don't define me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got non right in the name.
What's funny is my church is, it's non-denominational. However, we are part of North American Baptist. However, my pastors have an Assemblies of God background.
Wow.
So it's just weird.
Yeah, that sounds like
a four.
Yeah,
it's a four.
Let's see unhealthy.
Speaking of weird, how about the PCA?
PCA.
Oh, yeah, I was going to suggest Presbyterians.
That's like one, right? It's either one or six, in my opinion.
I'm just thinking of like all of the big mega Presbyterian churches I know.
Could
Ooh,
be a five.
Yeah. Ooh, I like that.
Because PCA is the. I mean, there's like PCUSA, and they tend to have the large. Like PCA does not have very many big churches. It's the smaller, like super conservative. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's one or five. Kind of like all the reform people we talked about earlier.
Here's the unhealthy five. Become reclusive and isolated from reality, eccentric and nihilistic. Highly unstable and fearful of aggressions, they reject and repulse others and all social attachments. That's called the frozen chosen.
I was gonna say, the frozen chosen. It's the PCA slogan that they don't claim.
I feel like I wanna say they're fives because I went to a Presbyterian college and studied theology, but I reject all of the unhealthy things.
Well, I mean, it's just saying if that denomination was unhealthy,
yeah, right.
That's
if
what
it,
they'd
if
be
goes
like.
That way.
Yeah.
It just so happened that it seemed really accurate for Southern Baptists.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's next?
We just did mine.
We did all the denominations. It sounds like there's only seven denominations. But also, mainline could be nine.
Just all mainline?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, let's look at unhealthy nine and see if it sounds like mainline. Can be highly repressed, undeveloped, and ineffectual. Feel incapable of facing problems. Become obstinate, disassociating self from all conflicts. Neglectful and dangerous to others.
You know who's a nine?
Who?
Quakers.
Ooh, eat it, Quakers.
Pacifists.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's pretty spot on.
Yeah. Okay, we did mainline.
What about the Catholic Church? I realize this is risky because when we start reading unhealthy things about the Catholic Church, it can get ugly fast, but
right.
Yeah.
Figured I'd put them out there.
It's not the Reformer? Or it is the Reformer?
No, it's not. No. I feel like because Catholics are so, they're so like authority oriented and like hierarchical. Like
six.
Maybe a six. Yeah.
Interesting.
So
I like that.
Explain six to me. That's like I get all the other numbers generally. Six, I cannot get my head around.
So sixes are loyalists. Everything they do and think is situated against authority, around authority figures. So they're either like really trusting and reliant on authority figures, or they have gone
attack mode
against authority
distrusting
figures.
Questioning.
Because they trust authority figures so much, when they are let
so
down,
like
they're furious and done.
Yes.
100%. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That gives me like I think I get it now. That That yeah. does sound fairly Roman Catholic to me.
It's all about safety and security for sixes. So when they feel safe and secure with an authority, they fall in line. If they don't, they can become, I don't know, distrusting or aggressive towards authority.
Got it.
Yeah. Level seven, number six. Fearing that they have ruined their security, they become panicky, volatile, and self-disparaging with acute inferiority feelings. Seeing themselves as defenseless, they seek out a stronger authority or belief to resolve all problems. Highly divisive, disparaging, and berating others. Yeesh.
Yeah. Yeah. Man.
This has been the world's most darkest segment.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to go to church now, right? Isn't that how this played out?
Yeah, we just made the church sound
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, if you're not a Christian, I'm sure we've just sold you on Christianity.
Because I'm a Southern Baptist, I'm going to read the healthy level three. Self-accepting, inner-directed, and authentic. Everything they seem to be. Modest and charitable. Self-deprecatory humor and fullness of heart emerge. Gentle and benevolent. That's my church.
Okay. Good.
I actually know churches like that, so that's pretty fitting.
Totally. There, we saved it, guys.
Yeah. The Southern Baptists are saved.
Nothing like throwing in a little good news at the end of that fire and brimstone.
All right. Well, that was not as fun as I thought it would be. Here's a fun one. Let's play 9 ways to object to the Enneagram. We're going to go around the room on this one, and we're going to take turns talking about. So the reason we did this is because, Barnabas, you were pointing out that you really like talking about, I don't know what you really like talking about, how people always like object to things.
I just am fascinated by the resistance to the Enneagram. Like there are people who just buck against it like it's a threat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's fair. It is a threat. How does a one object to the Enneagram? So we all know these people, right? The people who object to the Enneagram because like they're like, I think that's stupid. And you can usually tell what number they are based on how they object to it. And yeah. I think we've determined on this podcast that they're usually fives or nines. But in my opinion, any number can object to the Enneagram.
Yes.
So let's talk about what those numbers do when they do object to them. And that way you can type your unwilling friends at home.
I have a one in mind who has objected to the Enneagram to me for a long time. And her reason is that there isn't like a right answer. Like, when she was taking an Enneagram test, she was just agonizing over all the questions because she was like, well, I think that's the right answer, but should I say how I feel or just the right thing? And
so the right answer is like what she should be doing or like how she should act in a situation?
Yeah. That makes sense. But there really aren't like right answers, I suppose. In the Enneagram, it is all very subjective.
Yeah, because I feel like an average one would just have this assumption that everyone should be like a one.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously they'd look at an Enneagram and go like, wait, why are all these flawed personality types in here with the one?
Yeah.
What's the point of that?
Yeah.
Is the one the well actually guy, or is that be like more like a five? The one who's sort of the, you know, you bring both. Something up and they're like, well, actually.
I think it could be both.
Yeah, it could be both.
Some ones are more like morally or ethically perfectionists, you know. We had D.L. Mayfield as a guest, and she's not much of a well actually person. Then again, there's an element of well actually to her. Like she wouldn't be able to leave it alone if she heard someone saying, like, I'm putting my kids in private school for totally good reasons. She would want to say well actually to that.
Ones have an impulse like to correct. If something's wrong, they have to correct it. Fives, we
talked
about.
Does anybody like ones?
I love ones if they're healthy.
If they're healthy, it's, yeah.
If they stick to editing.
Well, no, I mean, if they devote themselves to a cause, it's pretty inspiring, to be honest.
Yeah.
I can see that. Okay. I was mainly, I don't love people who compulsively correct, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's annoying. Frustrating. Yeah. You gotta bring that in check, I think. Mm-hmm. I think twos object to the Enneagram because they're not comfortable thinking about themselves alone that much.
Okay. All right.
Does that seem right?
Yeah.
Okay. I think it, yeah. It, are you so convicted, Bethany?
Yeah, well, does that hit a little close to home?
It does. Maybe? This is, well.
This is awesome. Go ahead. Yeah, I've just realized this whole podcast, you've been talking about other people and never yourself. So let's hear about it, Bethany. Tell me about that.
Okay, well, first of all, it's not something that made me object to the Enneagram. Obviously, sure. I love it. I'm obsessed. Yeah. But I think probably the bigger thing of why I love the Enneagram is because I like to use it to help other people. And the part of it that has forced me to look at myself and work on things inside myself is the really painful, like, hard part of it that I don't like as much.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So,
Barnabas, what about number three?
The Enneagram forces you to confront what you're bad at and your failings, your weaknesses. And that's like the three's worst nightmare is, is sucking at stuff. So, or being exposed as being bad at things. And it is, so I think it's, if they're going to reject it, it's because they don't want anything to do with being exposed as having character flaws or weaknesses or failings or, you know, kind of whatever it exposes.
Yeah, there's an interesting distinction here because I realize this is morphed into nine reasons people reject the Enneagram as opposed to nine ways. Yeah. So what does the two say?
What does the two say?
Yeah. Or did we do all of them that way? The two would
deflect to someone else.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
In a really helpful way. But it would be a, you know, the question comes in and they're like, well, what about you kind of thing? And so it's just sort of like you're just going to ping pong this right back out towards somebody else. But again, with a good intention, but also a self-protective one.
And then the three would, I'm a little stumped on the three. How would the three get out of this?
They just don't have time for it.
Well, that's freaking brilliant.
But also like the three can be whatever is demanded of them, which means there's a bit of a chameleon aspect. So they can tap dance around the weaknesses until they're pinned down. It's like I resonate with threes a lot. As I was figuring out what I was, I landed on either seven or eight, but three was in the running.
Right.
And that ability to sort of be whatever is demanded of you and sort of show a different face to different people. There's a lot of that. So it's almost just hiding where you just reveal different aspects of yourself in different situations.
Yeah. Bethany, what about a four? I feel like this is pretty easy.
Why fours? Okay, fours.
Well, I'm assuming a four would be like, don't put a number on me.
Yeah, exactly. They would be like, I'm not one of these nine things. I'm like a special one.
Yeah, I'm tripped up because fours freaking love the Enneagram. Like,
that's true.
They do, but not all of them. I don't think, I mean, I feel like I know fours who aren't like crazy about it. And I think one of the reasons is because they are definitely uncomfortable being quote unquote put in a box.
Mm-hmm. But a disproportionate number of people who are crazed about the Enneagram are fours.
Correct. Yes.
Yes.
Because fours love feelings.
Yep. Yeah. That's totally.
And self-involvement. And the Enneagram. Yes. Yeah. Navel gazing.
Exactly.
And the Enneagram is all about that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. I'm five, I guess. So I've seen this in action a lot. Fives basically study it to death to the point where they get all mind boggled about, like, they get caught up in the stuff that doesn't match. And they just like, they're like drawing diagrams of like, of like how this doesn't sync up with this. And like, you know, like they inevitably find something in the number that they think they are that they're like, no, see, not this. And then they just overthink it, basically.
Yeah, unless it's 100% accurate match, it's just the data isn't there to prove it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's not science, right? Like, wasn't that your dad? Isn't he a five?
Yes.
Yeah, your dad was very much like, it's not scientific.
Yeah, he
that
called,
was his argument.
He called the Enneagram unsciencing science.
That's right. That's right.
Which is exactly what Joe Carter said.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
He said there is no scientific basis for this because right. I saw him in a Twitter interaction with like Mike Cosper, I think it was, uh-huh. who's he likes the Enneagram. I'm guessing he's a 4 because he's creative.
No, he's a 5.
He's a 5.
Actually.
Is he really? Yep. I mean, I can see that, but I would have guessed 4, but okay. But yeah, they had an interaction and almost verbatim, he said there is, you know, it's not based in science. There's no scientific, you know, there's no scientific root for this, which yeah. I'm assuming just means no sort of like the trial and error, mm-hmm. You know, prove it without a shadow of a doubt mentality. I think that's just a little bit funny for anybody who also mm-hmm. believes that we're made in the image of God.
Right.
And yeah.
God yeah. is also not really scientifically provable.
Yeah.
Indeed.
But anyway.
And I don't know a more 5 or 5 than Joe Carter anyway. Like that dude
that's
is
true.
super 5.
He's like, yeah, he's like 5+.
Yeah. 5 wing 5. all right. Number 6, Barnabas, go for it. Now that you know what that is.
Yeah.
6. I know what it is, but I don't have a keen enough sense of like how they I feel like they just respond by being nervous about stuff. Like
okay.
yeah, there's just sort of a fearful response to things, which is why they gravitate towards those with more authoritative voices.
Yeah, I'll tell you what they do is they go point at Joe Carter's article.
I was wondering about that. Like so if they read a really good book about the Enneagram first, they would point at that.
From someone they trusted as an authority figure.
Right. Mm-hmm. But if they read the Gospel Coalition thing and they look at that whole Gospel Coalition thing.
Mm-hmm. For guidance.
As their voice of authority, they would go, but they say.
Totally. Yep.
Okay.
Or yeah. they never feel like they can find their number because they just literally don't trust the system or don't trust themselves to figure it out. So they're
oh,
just
that's
like,
true.
I yep. just can't. I can't find my number. I don't know.
Is yep. the 6 the most unsatisfying number? That's the one that I really didn't want to be when I read the descriptions.
Of you mean the most unsatisfying to have?
Yeah, to like be a 6. Like that's the one that I looked at. I was like, oh, that's depressing.
I feel like a common story is people who didn't want to be 6s and finally just gave in and said, fine, I'm a 6.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the answer is maybe yes. But Enneafam, let us know. Are you a 6 that's happy to be one? I actually have grown to love 6s, and we've talked about this a lot on the show, and we'll talk about it more. But, yeah, 6s are awesome,
mm-hmm.
but you just have to dig for it. It's a little deeper,
yes.
I think, than the typical, like, oh, I'm an 8, I fight people or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Big deal, hey, guys. Hey, I'm a 4. I'm so deep because I'm a 4, and I care about only myself.
Yeah.
6s are deeper than that. The big thing about 6s is that they're brave because they allow themselves to think through all of the terrible things that could happen to you and everyone else. And so that is a pretty honorable thing because a lot of people just ignore those mm-hmm. possibilities. And 6s allow themselves to live in that reality where those things are possible. And they make... They keep everyone alive as a result.
I like being kept alive, so thank you, 6s.
Yeah.
Yay, 6s. They're the ones who make guardrails on the bridges.
Yes.
All right, what's next? 7. Bethany?
7s, I feel like it's pretty obvious why 7s would not be too interested in the Enneagram.
Yeah, super, yeah.
Yeah. Because it's deep and it's emotional and literally the problem of 7s is that they do not like to face pain and discomfort. And that is what like the Enneagram is. It's like face yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the way they reject it is basically saying this is boring.
Yeah. Yep.
They would find a distraction.
Yeah. This is not fun.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ride roller skates instead.
Ride roller skates.
Or perfect. Roller skate. Yeah.
7s on roller skates. That's mm-hmm. It's the perfect distraction.
It is.
8s would just like beat the crap out of the guy.
Yeah, they would just sort of berate it for being
brute force.
I mean, the thing is, they would take all of the other responses, I feel like, and just be like, just pick whichever one they're feeling at the moment. Like, I don't have time for this. Just you're wasting my time. Them. Your argument doesn't make any sense. I'm on my way to somewhere else. Like, whatever it is, mm-hmm. don't tell me what to do. Don't
they
put
would
a
just
number
use
on
it
me.
like a 2x4, just slamming that person upside the head with it.
Yeah, just a sort of a verbal beat down and go.
I love it.
Yeah,
that's great. What about nines? Peacemaker.
I feel like a 9 and a 4 are going to respond somewhat similarly, but pointed in different directions. So the 4 is like, don't label me. The 9 is like, don't label anybody.
Oh, that's
like
a good point.
Don't try to, like, don't box people in. Don't limit people. Don't point out their weak. Like, that's an uncomfortable thing, and it causes conflict. Like, oh,
yeah,
Joe wrote
yeah.
an article, and now we're all mad at each other. That's
oh,
not
yeah.
a happy
it's
occurrence.
Not worth it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And plus, 9s are the ultimate, like, not knowing themselves. So I feel like that might not be appealing, this thing that forces you to look inside yourself and deal with all your stuff.
Yeah, I read that 9s like particularly evade when it mm-hmm. comes to that kind of thing with the Enneagram.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's do life advice. Barnabas, we are not experts on the Enneagram, but we are obsessed, and therefore we are qualified to give you advice on anything you're having trouble with or need help with in your life.
Well, I'm going to follow the example of a 6 then and lean on you as trusted advisors to give me
as
advice.
As you should.
Yes. I think you're qualified to give advice on everything.
Mm-hmm. Sweet.
So my present life struggle is raising a almost 13-year-old girl, which
we got this.
Is wonderful and more complex than anything I have ever done in my entire life. She is more complex than anything I've encountered in my entire life. Mm-hmm. So, how does one father a 13-year-old girl? Well, almost
wow.
13.
That is a broad question.
That is a broad question.
Okay, how does one resolve conflict with?
Oh,
and let's go narrower and more context specific, mm-hmm. especially when she argues just like me.
Mm.
So I am arguing with myself, except in 13-year-old girl form.
Yeah.
Ready, go.
Wow, I'm just thinking back to being a 13-year-old myself. And
me too.
Richard was thinking back to being a girl. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I actually, at one point in my life, found my old journals from when I was a wee little teenager, and they were so angsty and like awful. I burned them because I didn't want them to exist anymore. It was too embarrassing.
I wrote a lot of poetry back in those days.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you play a lot of Wonderwall on the guitar and stuff too?
Not Wonderwall, but okay. Definitely some Smashing Pumpkins and
Ooh,
Bush
yes.
and stuff.
Did you feel like a rat in a cage?
Despite all of my rage.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
That song was made for the 13-year-old boy.
My, I have advice.
All right.
Find someone else to convince her of the thing you want to convince her of. Because it's kind of like, I think it like kind of like a marriage relationship. I've found that if I tell Jennifer to do something, she's like, idiot, shut up. But then the minute like one other person tells her to do something, she's like, you know what so-and-so said I should do? And then she did that thing.
I remember that being the case for me. Like, I remember being conscious of it at 13, 14, 15. We're like,
yeah.
A youth leader or a teacher or a coach would be like, hey, you should work on this thing, this bad habit you have. And it was the same thing my mother had been telling me to do like 4,000 times.
Yeah.
And she was clearly an idiot in my mind. But when the coach said it, it was genius. So that makes a lot of sense.
And I think it's pretty simple. You just bribe people. Like, you don't even, they don't even have to believe it. You just pay them money to say the thing you need them to say. Which flows into my next advice, which is pick your battles. Otherwise, you'll go broke.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Are all of the things that you're arguing about, are they that important?
So here's the difficulty with that one.
Bears versus Eagles. She's a Bears fan.
The short answer is no, of course they're not all important.
Yeah.
The problem is I don't pick all the fights.
Oh. Mm.
You know, it's like, hey, we got to leave to go to school. And, you know, she's like, no, I need to go change clothes, or I need to change my hair or whatever. And I'm like, no, we need to leave right now and your hair
looks
fine.
Wait, so it is that important? Well, what you're telling me is, like, getting to school in time is important, right?
But she feels her hair is important.
Right. So, so yes, we're valuing different things. I guess that's most complex. Okay, so but there are a lot of instances where it's just a conversation about, like, she says something that's just, she's uninformed. And I'm like,
of course she is. She's 13.
She's 12, right. Yeah, no, it's 12. Like, it's very standard uninformed. It's not like, you know.
And she was 13 a minute ago. I feel pretty confident.
Well, she's almost 13. So she's on the verge
now
of 13.
Now we get to the real truth.
So, or I'll say something and she'll respond with an uninformed response. And I'm like, is it baiting me? Like, do I have to just go, okay. Or do I correct her because she's wrong? Like, she's wrong about something, it's innocuous, but it might be beneficial to know. So it's not a moral thing. I don't know.
How did these?
And then she argues with you after you correct her?
She's 100% certain she's right about everything because she's my child.
If you feel like it's the kind of thing, like sometimes you know, people are saying like the word genre, but they're saying like Jenner, right? And you're going to regret that eventually. So you have to tell them. What you do is you just correct once. You do one correction. If they go, nuh-uh, you just go, all right, well,
I told
blood's
you.
Off my hands.
Your also, blood is not on my hands. I'll use that. I'll start using that line. Yeah. Child, your blood is not on my hands.
Yeah. Does she, like, are these the kinds, maybe this is too personal, you don't have to answer this, but is it the kind of conflict that will, like, end in her crying and slamming the door or something, or is it just like kind of a playful argument that it's like you're both over it in a few minutes?
Most are the latter. Not a lot of crying and slamming doors. You know, occasionally it's the like occasionally that happens, but not too terribly often, although it does seem to be increasing in frequency, which is that's frustrating too. Well, and the problem is that since she argues like me, like there's sort of a no holds barred, like you go toe to toe until you win. And that, I don't find that to be a real productive method of parenting.
Right.
Shocker. I know.
Win at all costs. That's our advice.
Win at all costs.
That's right. Yeah.
No.
That's,
I mean,
that
so
seems emotionally healthy.
Assuming that you're an eight, we'll just assume that. Eights can be unaware of how intense their challenging abilities are. So maybe if it's not that necessary or it's heading towards an ugly ending, just, I don't know, take it down a notch, like lower your voice.
I feel like I'm 13 now and I'm getting parented. Right? Take it down a notch. You're at an 11. Take it down to a 6.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's actually really good advice. I just am not terribly good at it yet.
Yeah. That's all right.
I would really examine the stakes of whatever you're arguing about and decide if it's worth the real stakes. Because probably what you're really tied up in is kind of just like, feel, I don't know, like there's an element of like I gotta convince her, but if the stakes aren't much more than like she's gonna be wrong, period, end of the thing, then you can probably just like say one thing, and if she says nuh-uh, then be like, all right,
blood's not on
master that.
All right. Yeah, the passive aggressive. I mean, you grew up in the South.
Yeah, don't do that.
You're a masterfully passive aggressive,
yeah,
aren't you?
I know. Yeah, I've definitely been annoyed at the, all right. I hate that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I've heard that one before.
Don't do that. Just go, okay.
I need to be a better predictor of what's going to turn into an argument, too. If I could get better at that, this whole thing goes away. Or not the whole thing, but most of these. Because it's almost always just, I said one thing and then, you know, her hackles go up and I'm like, oh, son of a gun, like, what did I do? And here we go. Instead of just letting whatever, you know, letting sleeping dogs lie, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, our condolences. That sounds hard.
Relationships in general are hard. It's not just kids.
Yeah.
So, well, thanks, Barnabas. I think we'll probably end the episode there.
I think you solved my problem.
Great.
This is where the music comes in.
This has been No Chill Enneagram. It is hosted and produced by Richard Clark and Bethany Perkins. Edited by Richard Clark. Theme music is Max Flashback by Lee Rosevere. We want to hear from you. If you're an Enneagram number 9, 4, 2, or 7, feel free to leave a review on iTunes. If you are a 6, please only do this if you trust us. If you are an 8 or a 1, please do not leave us a review on iTunes. But you can feel free to reach out to us on Twitter, where we'd love to be challenged by you or hear from your overflowing inner critic. Our Twitter handle is @NoChillEnneapod. That's @NoChillEnneapod. Enneagram number 5s, please include us in your next exhaustive list of hilarious podcasts. And 3s, you can just give us credit after we inspire you to do whatever amazing thing you're going to do next. If you are a number 1 through 9 and you haven't already, subscribe to this podcast wherever podcasts are subscribable.